This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Shares in car companies drop on markets around the world, and troubled Deutsche Bank cuts thousands of jobs.
This is almost a statement of defeat, you know, throwing their hands up in the air and basically paring back their ambitions.
Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Vivienne Nunes. Good morning. Shares in car companies have fallen in Europe and Asia after the United States raised the prospect of tariffs on vehicle imports. Washington is investigating whether tariffs should be applied on national security grounds. Toyota stocks dropped 3% while Mazda plunged more than 5%. I put it to David Bailey from the Aston Business School that investors see tariffs as a real possibility.
Yes, they do. And of course, we've already seen this in terms of aluminium and steel, and it creates huge uncertainty for a car industry which is very international. I don't think Trump quite gets how international the supply chain is. So, you know, a Mercedes-Benz that's being driven in New York might have been made in Alabama, a BMW in South Carolina, Volkswagen's in Tennessee. And the components going into those could come from the US, from Canada, from Mexico, or further afield. So it creates huge uncertainty for car companies if politicians wade in this way.
Japan has said these proposed tariffs would go against WTO rules. Are they right about that?
They may well be. And in fact, if Trump goes down this route, I expect there to be a challenge to it from the Europeans, from Japan, possibly from other NAFTA partners. I think this is largely about Trump trying to put pressure on Canada and Mexico to reform NAFTA, to try and be more favourable towards US manufacturing. But as we saw with steel and aluminium, where his real issue was China, he alienated a whole load of other trading partners, and I think he risked doing that again in this particular case. So he may well face action in terms of taking it to the WTO, and if the WTO says that this is illegal, then other countries could impose retaliatory measures.
David Bailey. Let's do the numbers. Japan's stock market fell more than 1%, led by the fall in car shares. In Germany, the market nudged forward, but shares in BMW, Daimler and Volkswagen reversed. Meanwhile, Turkey's lira slumped back against the dollar after an emergency interest rate hike failed to allay fears about the economy. More than 7,000 jobs are to be cut from the troubled German lender Deutsche Bank. It's the first big move by new CEO Christian Zuing, who is under pressure to return the bank to profitability. Supriya Menon is a strategist at Pictet Asset Management.
Deutsche Bank, out of all the European players, was the most ambitious in terms of its global investment banking plans. And in reality, actually, Deutsche Bank, as well as other European and UK players, have been losing market share in investment banking to far more profitable US rivals. So this is basically almost a statement of defeat, you know, throwing their hands up in the air and basically paring back their ambitions and becoming more local, more European.
Do you think it matters that Europe doesn't have an investment bank of the stature of your Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley's, etc.?
Yes, it is definitely a good point that the US banks seem to have beaten out their European rivals, and we basically don't have a bank of that stature. But I think just looking at the new political landscape, I don't think that's a priority for policymakers. I think the experience of the last crisis is still raw in that society was seen as paying a large price for the failure of these banks, for the losses that were, in a sense, socialized. And the efforts have been actually to pare back the size of the financial sector relative to GDP. So given the regulatory pressure, given the shift in political priorities, I don't think that's as much of a focus.
Supriya Menon. Colombia's 2016 peace agreement between the government and the guerrilla movement known as the FARC won applause around the world. But emerging from half a century of civil war is proving a huge challenge. Many are concerned about the stability of the Colombian economy in the run-up to presidential elections on Sunday. Lucy Sheriff reports from Bogota.
Nos permite trabajar.
The peace deal was a definitive moment in Colombia's history, with President Manuel Santos winning the Nobel Peace Prize for his efforts to end his country's 50-year war. But what happens now? Colombia is not only faced with the challenge of bringing a country which has been divided for so long together, but also reskilling former guerrillas and reaching out to the rural isolated communities who are integral to Colombia's economy. Speaking recently, Labour Minister Rafael Pardo addresses how the country's economy will fare in this new era of peace.
One of the problems we have is to reduce the polarization of people who were in the past members of armed groups.
Although oil-rich Colombia survived the crash in petroleum prices over the past few years, it is now looking to a new industry to build its future on, and hopes to bring in coca farmers to help, as Pardo explained.
Agriculture is the main sector. It was the sector who grew more in the last year and is going to be the sector who is going to grow more during the post-conflict period.
Imagine you were born in a poor family.
I flew to Medellin, the mountainous capital of Antioquia, which was once dubbed the world's most violent city. The city's bloody era of cartels, Pablo Escobar and excessive murder rates were gruesomely portrayed in the Netflix series Narcos.
Yo soy Pablo Emilio Escobar Gaviria.
Now a popular tourist destination, I interviewed local businessman Andres Munera, who founded a tour company in Medellin in 2010.
Foreign investment has already been discouraged by the tax reform, which has increased a lot of taxes for the companies. Colombia is among the top five countries in the world with the highest taxes. So that's a very critical discouragement for companies to come here. Regardless if it's safer or not, if they don't have the right economic policies, that's not going to attract foreign investment.
In Colombia, I'm the BBC's Lucy Sheriff for Marketplace.
And finally, China has fined the Japanese retailer Muji $31,000 for using packaging that lists Taiwan as a country. Taiwan has been self-ruling since 1950, but Beijing regards it as a breakaway province of China. In London, I'm Vivienne Nunes with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.